I'm Goldie Sayers, Olympian and javelin bronze medalist from Beijing 2008. And welcome to a brand new podcast from the English Institute of Sport, the EIS Insider, which looks to lift the lid on the science behind peak performance. And in this first episode, we're going to have a natter about nutrition. What should we eat to run faster, swim longer, or in my case, throw further? Are carbs the key? Is kale still cool? And we'll be busting some myths about food along the way. And helping me dissect our diets to learn to eat like a champion is the EIS's Head of Performance Nutrition, Mike Naylor. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Goldie. Thank you for having me. Great to be here today and very excited to be chatting with this one.
And that is a very, very fancy job title. What does your job involve?
It's a fantastic job. Very lucky to be working for the English Institute of Sport, working with a fantastic team of 22 nutritionists, providing support to a number of Olympic and Paralympic sports. So essentially what my job is to work with the other heads of service and to work with the nutrition team to help develop the provision that we provide to sports. So it's a very exciting job and a fantastic group of people to work with.
So how did you get into the field of nutrition? Have you always been really keen on food?
I've always loved nutrition. I've always loved food. And when my mum's talking to her friends, she always tells a story about how she would get reports from school, how I would be telling what my friends should eat for lunch. So I took playground football so seriously as a child. And if we ever lost football, I'd be looking for every little thing that we could do trying to improve our playground football team. So I'd then be challenging my friends, are they eating the right foods at lunch? Even from such a young age, I was so interested in food and nutrition and the power that can it have to support performance.
And you've worked with a multitude of teams and sports. Can you tell us a bit more about who you've had the privilege of working with during your career?
Yeah, so when I first come for my interview at the English Institute of Sport about 14 years ago now, I clearly remember talking about the experience that I had working with diving and also with some snooker players. And apparently it was working with snooker players that actually caught the attention of the people that was interviewing me, which I thought was surprising, but because it was so different. Since then, I've gone on to work with a number of different sports. So went on to work with para swimming. And then after that, come back to the sports which were closest to my heart as I was growing up, which were football and rugby. And yeah, very lucky to work both in the Premier League and the Premiership with rugby and football, and then work with both of our international teams as well.
Great. So you've worked with lots of different teams, and obviously the EIS works with a multitude of sports as well. So what is nutrition at EIS? How does it actually work?
We talk about working backwards from performance. So how we can use nutrition to improve performance. And what we need to take into account that every athlete is different as well. And we need to take into their preferences, their style, their character, a number of different things. So nutrition isn't the same for every sport. And further than that, isn't the same for every individual. And we want to use nutrition not to just support performance, but support their health and their well-being as well. So the athlete is at the center of everything that we do. And nutrition can't work alone. Like, nutrition doesn't win gold medals. It's about working as a collective with the other members of the performance support team to make a difference so our strategies are aligned.
And what does it take, kind of broadly speaking, to fuel an elite athlete?
With every sport and every athlete being different, it's about listening to the athlete and the environment that they're in. So for me, it's about making sure they've got enough energy in the first instance is an important factor. That usually comes in forms of carbohydrates, making sure that they're consuming enough carbs to support their performance, and making sure they've got the right nutrients to help support their recovery. We have a phrase that we use at the 3 R's. So to replenish, rehydrate and repair, which you might remember yourself, you might have heard, to make sure that they're getting enough protein to repair their muscles after training or after competition, enough carbohydrates to replenish the carbohydrates they've used, and enough fluid to rehydrate.
And in terms of those carbs and proteins and fats, how much should we be eating in general terms of those different food groups?
It's different for everyone. And I think it's in the modern day, it's actually quite hard because everyone eats, everyone becomes an expert in nutrition. So I get how confusing it is. The reality is you need to take into account of a number of different factors. So what works for you as an individual? We all do different amount of activity, our jobs and our roles. Some of us sit down in an office for most of the day. Other people are out walking. So straight away, that changes the energy demands of our daily life. So I think one of the best bits of advice for most people is to actually understand what your energy expenditure is. So the amount of calories that your body actually uses during the day, and then try and use that as a starting point to understand actually how much you should eat. Because when people think of nutrition, a lot of the time it's either to maintain their body composition or to put on muscle or to lose body fat. So to understand the first principle of that, it's actually understanding how much you need to eat. And then from there comes the carbohydrates. So are you involved in a lot of intense activity? So if you play, for instance, myself, we'll play football 2 or 3 times a week and go gym 2 or 3 times a week, then from that, I know I'll need more carbohydrates because that's the main fuel to support the performance that I do. Whereas if you don't do any activity, you might not need as much carbohydrates. And then you can work through each nutrient like that to actually understand what your demands are of your lifestyle and your day to get that right. And my best bit of advice, as with this, with the number of conflicting messages that are out there, is always to speak to a qualified nutritionist, a registered nutritionist or dietitian, to actually get good advice if you're looking to go further with it as well.
So you've obviously worked with lots of different sports and lots of different athletes. And as you say there, it's a very individualized process. So what would you say the difference between fueling, say, a footballer or a completely different sport like a long jumper would be? What would be the key differences in the nutritional plan for those two opposing event groups, sport groups?
What you'll find is, in particular, there's a difference in the energy demands. I remember working in rugby where, you know, the energy expenditure of some of the players would be something like 5,000, 6,000 calories a day. Whereas another sport, in the example you give as a long jumper, I'm making some assumptions here because I've never worked with long jumpers. I don't know how hard they train, but I'm guessing they wouldn't do the same intensity of running and the amount of running that a rugby player or football do. Straight away, that changes the amount of carbohydrates that are required to support that performance. And then that they might have a different approach around, right, how can they use their performance support and nutrition to enhance that reaction speed, to that acceleration, that sprint, that jump? How can you actually focus your nutrition to do that, which will have different demands?
And when you're working with various different athletes, how do you kind of ensure that they stay on top of their nutrition?
We work with the athletes. You know, athletes are people and there's a lot of care in what we do, and you've got to work together. If you want to create change, you want to create behavior change, and hopefully that's something they're going to change for their duration of their career. And hopefully if it's something health related, it's something that's going to change for their life. So a big element of coaching comes into what we do, with people and care at the center of how we approach nutrition. So we really need to listen, and we really need to take into account the preferences of the athlete and work with them in a way that's actually going to create long-term change.
And can we all kind of learn to eat like a champion? You talk about behavior change. What are the best ways to sort of change your eating habits if you're not perhaps eating in the best way possible?
For me, it comes down to quite a simple principle, first of all, of purpose, and, you know, have an understanding of why you want to create change. Because if you don't have a purpose, then sometimes it's hard to create change. You know, for an athlete, that purpose might be, you know, to be the best marathon runner in the world. But, you know, a purpose for a lot of us might just be, you know, to improve our life so we can live healthier for a longer period of time, so we can be more active and play with our grandkids when we're in our 70s. And, you know, that is a really relevant reason to actually take your nutrition seriously and you know, use food as part of the way that you support your body to look after yourself into those older years. So I think working back from a purpose that means something to you, that you can actually relate to motivate yourself to make those changes in your nutrition and actually adhere to it for a long period of time. There's no magic bullets in nutrition. It's about doing the fundamentals well for a period of time. That's where you make the biggest difference.
And what do you find personally the biggest challenges in elite sport working with athletes around nutrition?
I've been away with the team for seven weeks recently, and there's a lot of athletes who are on a road for a long period of time. They might be in the same place. They might be eating from the same buffet. To a degree, food is fuel, but it's also something that everyone wants to enjoy. I think one of the biggest challenges, and something that we've worked on really hard over recent years with performance chefs, is that collaboration of nutrition and the science of nutrition and the art of cooking and bringing it together to create something that's really powerful to make nutrition taste incredible as well, which then makes it a lot easier to adhere to and stick to for a long period of time, especially when you're away for those long competitions.
And talking of culinary ability, I certainly trained with some athletes who weren't the best chefs in the world. So if you're trying to stick to a good nutrition plan, what do you recommend to those athletes who perhaps can't cook?
Now, my first bit of advice around this is always, you know, try and learn a new skill, try and enjoy cooking, and just giving people the confidence in the kitchen. At the EIS, we've undertaken quite a lot of work over lockdown with athletes doing kitchen coaching and working together to actually teach them new meals, understand what sort of cooking skills they had, understand what utensils they had in their house, and work together to actually learn how to cook. So we took that one on head on.
Did it ever get competitive? Was it like ready, yeah, steady, cook?
Yeah, we done one within our nutrition team. Well, we've done a couple within our nutrition team, and we got very competitive as nutritionists as well. But yeah, athletes, you know, have that competitive nature, and it's a good way to do it. I remember we was doing this with Para Swim probably 12 years ago, where we would have competitions on camps, getting everyone together to cook new dishes, and it's an incredible thing to do. And probably every team I've worked with, we've done that with, including the England national rugby team. We would have cooking competitions as well, which was always fantastic.
Were there any good chefs within England rugby? Can you name any names?
In the women's team, I remember once Amber Reid and Emily Scarrett actually come up with their own curry. I'm sure they won't mind me talking about it too much, but we used to do this recipe of the week, and that featured as recipe of the week because it tasted that incredible.
Amazing. And there's been a lot of publicity of late from the likes of Lewis Hamilton and Novak Djokovic as they've gone plant-based. Is that something that we should all be considering, becoming vegan?
It's been fascinating over the last few years, and I understand many aspects of it, especially looking at the environmental factors, but it's not right for everyone from a nutrition perspective, but at the same time, it's not wrong. So originally, it was thought that it was hard for an athlete to follow a vegan diet because it's hard to get the amount of protein in your nutrition. It's hard to get a number of the B vitamins into your nutrition. But, you know, if you're really good and prepared with your nutrition, then you can get enough protein into your diet via plant sources. It just takes extra work and extra preparation. There's no concerns with athletes that want to be vegan now and support a number of vegan athletes. But it's not necessarily better than people that eat meat, because you get a large number of nutritional benefits from eating meat as well. I just think it's that individual preferences from the athletes on what approach they want to take.
So why do you think that the likes of Djokovic and Lewis Hamilton have said that a plant-based diet has been so impactful on their performance, do you think?
They've obviously found something that works for them, and they feel better from it. So I don't know the athletes, so who am I to tell them whether it's better or not? But we don't know what changes they've made. They might have had some unhealthier choices within their diet when they was eating more meat, but I'm literally making a complete guess. Or just simply eating more vegetables is a good thing. And maybe that change in their nutrition of eating more vegetables has improved their general health, their immune health, which has made them feel better as well.
And you talk there about immune health. Obviously, success isn't always a linear progression, as we know, in sport and in life. And obviously, there are injuries that come about from training so hard as an elite athlete. Are there any ways of helping injury recovery through your nutrition? And how would you change an athlete's nutritional plan when they are ill or injured?
Yeah, so it's one of the things that we put a lot of focus and attention on. And there's a number of bits of research that suggest in some situations and scenarios that the athletes that miss the most sessions due to injury and illness during their training and lead to major games, it has an impact on their success in that environment, which sounds pretty obvious, but it's one of the reasons why we put so much focus on actual nutrition for health and immune health as well, and also during injury. So for instance, when you've got some long-term injuries, naturally every injury is different, but there are things that we can do. So especially maintaining body composition during that time, maintaining muscle mass during that time. So there's things that we can do with protein feeds and protein timing to get enough protein in during that time to support them during their injury, so it's faster for them when they come back to training to get back up to speed. There's also little things around the likes of collagen supplementation that might help someone get back faster. There's also some research to suggest that even foods such as turmeric may help with inflammation, which may help the recovery. Still very early on in the research in these areas, but it's just examples how people are starting to use food during injury and during illness to actually help support the athlete as well.
So during those injury phases, you're trying to maintain the muscle mass of those athletes. You talked of protein feeds. What do you mean by that?
There's some research around the amount of protein that we consume, and I'll keep the maths very simple. So for instance, to support muscle protein synthesis, so the building of muscle tissue and the maintenance of muscle tissue during a period during injury, if you have around anywhere between 1.6 grams per kilogram of body weight and 2 grams per kilogram of body weight or protein per day. So that'd say, make the maths easy, 100 kilo athlete, if you have 160 grams to 200 grams of protein a day, then that might be able to help support your muscle mass. So say a medium chicken breast or a large chicken breast is around 40 grams of protein. You might be looking at around 5 equivalent amounts of that protein spread throughout the day to help preserve your muscle mass. And that's the second bit around that timing, around having a protein feed in every 2 to 3 hours with 20 grams plus of protein in it to help support maintain that muscle mass.
That's a lot of protein, a lot of chickens.
It doesn't all need to be chicken.
My next guest might be able to shed some light on the next big food trend. Let's bring in Simon Harris from the Turmeric Company. Hello, Simon.
Hi, nice to meet you. Thank you very much for having me.
And before we start, is it turmeric or turmeric or something else?
Naively, we used to think it didn't matter, but it is officially turmeric. So we are officially the Turmeric Co. And we heavily push turmeric now as the correct pronunciation.
So what is turmeric and where would we know it from?
Turmeric itself, people know it because of a spice and a flavouring that they might have in their cupboard or sitting at the back of their cupboard that they're using, you know, for adding to flavour every now and then. And curry is probably the number one use of turmeric up until turmeric shots and lattes became a thing. But as an ingredient, as kind of something where, you know, as we see as a medicinal plant, let's say the root of the plant. So turmeric root is what has the health benefits. It's been used for 4,000 years in Eastern medicine. And it's, as of most recently, let's say around 2007, it's now making its way into Western science.
So what are those medicinal benefits? What are the benefits of taking turmeric?
It's a natural anti-inflammatory. A number of diseases are caused by untreated inflammation. So there's a lot that it can help with. Overall, it can really strengthen an immune system. It can enhance recovery through its anti-inflammatory properties. It can really reduce pain in a lot of cases. So many of our customers are suffering with arthritis. You know, we've got some incredible reviews where people are living a normal life you know, something as simple as a natural anti-inflammatory and a natural shot of turmeric was actually really changing their way of life and really improving people's quality of life just through those properties.
And so how much of it do we need to ingest? How much do we need to eat? And is it a tablet, or is it, when you talk about a turmeric shot, is that a liquid shot, or is it, you know, people aren't going to the back of their herb cabin and downing a few tablespoons of turmeric, I'm guessing.
I mean, and that's the problem with, I guess, turmeric, and what it's very trendy and it's everywhere and brands are pushing it. But then the downside is it's confusing at the same time, because, you know, generally people, the public won't know exactly what it is. I mean, if I do a trade show, I'll take with a bowl of turmeric root because that's what we use in our shops, and people have never seen it. They'll ask me what it is because they're so used to seeing the powder. What we do is cold press that root. We don't want to lose any nutritional value. We want to gain as much of the highest yield of curcumin, which is one of the active compounds, not the only active compound. It's one of over 100 active compounds within turmeric. It is the one that has the most science behind it. So it is the one that people hear the most, and that's what they go for. But it is only one of over 100. So we're naturally extracting the highest yield of curcumin possible from our freshly cold pressed fruit. And then there's a combination of ingredients that we use. So in our form is a shot. So we can combine with things like watermelon, pineapple, pomegranate. They taste good, and turmeric itself is notoriously tastes bad, but they also add certain properties of their own, which will increase bioavailability, and that's obviously important. So absorbing that turmeric once you're consuming it, hence why we use a liquid form, because your body can absorb that better. And then that's why we can also combine with raw piperine, which is an extract of black pepper. There's science behind that to say that increases the bioavailability of turmeric by 2,000%. So that's almost essential. For our point of view, it's a shot that you drink every morning, and we're including as much turmeric as we can squeeze in to the smallest form possible, so it's convenient as well.
And how popular is it becoming? So what sorts of people are using it? You talked about arthritis, but obviously we've got elite athletes using it as well.
Yeah, so from our point of view, we're seeing two completely opposite ends of the scale, which is really good for us. So our products specifically were designed in with athletes in mind. Injury prevention, injury recovery, to recover quicker and actually get back. So from our point of view, the company founder, Thomas Hal Robson Kanu, he started his early football career as a teenager and was topped for one of the top picks in the country. And he suffered some really, you know, painful injuries when he was a youngster. He had to have surgery on his knee twice. Doctors kind of completely wrote off his career and told him he wouldn't play professionally, even at a standard of, you know, in the garden or even general exercise. After his second surgery, he was in really bad pain for his knee, and his knee would swell up after 30 minutes of exercise. And a natural anti-inflammatory at that point was the only route to go down. So our product and the formula that's created is, you know, it's been in the making for 15 years purely because it was kind of cooked up in the kitchen as the most potent anti-inflammatory using only natural ingredients. So there was no kind of adverse side effects from taking a painkiller or, you know, prescription medication. And it started working. It really reduced the swelling in his knee. Thomas went on to still plays today, and he's had a very, very successful football career through the Euros internationally with Wales. But then since launching the business in 2018, we've noticed our customer base isn't athletes. It's kind of the older generation that are looking for a natural alternative to pain medication. And it's because they've been suffering so long with arthritis and joint pain. That general health and well-being audience is, for us, it's kind of your non-athletes, maybe ex-athletes, but it's people with a lot of serious joint pain that are looking for a natural alternative.
I'm definitely making some notes here. So is this another kale, or do you think that turmeric is here to stay for the long term?
For us, it was one that we saw the potential of it very early on. You know, when we started experimenting with it 15 years ago, it was really kind of the early days. We didn't have kind of the wealth of information that we have now. So we've really sat back and watched it grow in popularity, and where it's at now, it's hugely popular, and it isn't one that's just kind of come and disappear very quickly. It's been around. Like I say, with Eastern medicine, it's been used for 4,000 years plus. The science does have a little bit of catching up to do. You know, the first kind of record of curcumin on Western medicine science was 2007. So that just shows they've still got some catching up to do in actually really understanding the power of this route that we've seen anecdotally, we've seen with Thomas's own career and some of the reviews we get from our customers. So from the kind of life-changing stories that we've heard, we know it's something that should be taken seriously. It's something that a lot of athletes are just using now because their dietitian or their nutritionist is recommending it. And then it's like, okay, it's a tricky one because a nutritionist will say, right, you need turmeric in your diet. And the athlete will just look, you know, stare blankly back at them. And it's like, well, how am I going to do that? You know, I've tried it once and it tasted horrible. I'm not going to do it every day. So it will gain more popularity when I think people see, you know, they'll try our shots and be like, the first reaction normally is, wow, this actually isn't bad. It tastes good. And then they're like, okay, so this is what my nutritionist is telling me and it tastes good. I can happily drink one of these every single day.
What I really want to know, which is the million dollar question, is how do you get turmeric out of clothing? It's notoriously powerful kind of it's staining clothing from my cooking experience.
It's clothing, it's blenders, saucepans, it's kitchen worktops, fingernails.
you don't have any secret cleaning agents that get rid of it?
Well, you know, the secret is to buy our products and let us do the messy work for you.
So, Mike, we've heard from the guys from the Turmeric Company. What do you reckon?
They're great guys. And actually was very, very lucky to work with Thomas as a football player. Just saw how his approach to nutrition was so diligent, was so forward thinking, was really good with the fundamentals of his nutrition as well, and was a pleasure to work with. So it's fantastic to see, you know, athletes taking such interest in nutrition as well. And it's very early in its research, but there's excitement in the area as well.
Fascinating. So what would you recommend in terms of a pre-workout meal or a pre-competition meal?
It's not just the pre-exercise meal. And sometimes it's the food that you eat the day before, which is more important than the actual food in the hours before you perform. So consuming, for instance, I'll go back to football. I'll make it more real for everybody, being a keen seven-a-side football player in Brixton every Saturday morning.
What's your position, Mike?
I'm a goal scorer.
Okay. Goal hogger.
I'm a goal hogger. I compare myself to Harry Kane.
Harry Kane of Brixton.
Yeah, Harry Kane of Brixton. Others agree. I know on that, the day before I'm playing, that the nature of my game, I do a lot of short sprints and high intensity work. So I'm increasing my carbohydrate intake the day before. You need that amount of time for your body to be able to digest that fuel and turn it to muscle glycogen. So glycogen is the storage of carbohydrates in our muscles, which is going to be one of the primary fuels for our performance, in this instance, my performance on a seven-a-side football match. So all I'm doing in the hours before, I can't influence my muscle glycogen stores anymore due to the time it takes to convert those carbohydrates to glycogen in my muscles. So all I'm doing is eating some food that makes me feel good, topping up like my blood glucose levels, so the store of carbohydrates that I've got readily available to perform. So I might have something a lot lighter, so might just be a bowl of rice pops, which might not be seen as perfect, but all it's doing is providing me with that little bit of fuel that doesn't make me feel heavy and gives me another smaller top up of carbohydrates to go out and perform.
So what will you have eaten the night before your seven-a-side football game?
So this is quite popular among a lot of athletes as well. And it's that pasta dish the night before. So it's the same at England football. It's the same with so many athletes that we work with, is that day before, pasta becomes a favourite amongst so many people. And it's something I enjoy as well. And it provides a fuel with a purpose for my performance the next day as well.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about food and nutrition, but what about hydration for performance? How key is that?
Yeah, it's massive. And especially when you're dealing with that heat and humidity, the amount that you sweat, the amount of electrolytes that you use in your sweat, it becomes essential to have a deliberate hydration strategy as well to make sure that you're drinking enough to support your performance and support your health. And a bit of a general advice for everyone is just, you know, just have like a water bottle on you and just zip on water regularly to support your hydration. It supports so many different areas of not just your performance, but for your health as well, from your muscular function to your cognitive function. So it's a simple strategy that can apply to everyone to make sure that they're consuming enough fluid.
And is there a sort of magic baseline number for fluid consumption in a day?
Yeah, so there's a lot of research around around this, and it is individual based on sweat rates and electrolyte loss, which, you know, we'll go into that extra level of detail with the athletes, but quite a good guiding principle is consuming around 2 liters of fluid a day, and then plus an addition anywhere between an additional 200 milliliters and a liter based on actually how much you sweat during an exercise session. So there's some general principles and guidelines out there as well, which is useful for everyone.
Okay. And we've talked a bit about perhaps foods that athletes like to eat, and maybe they might have the odd vice. And mine, if I'm being honest, might be a cold beer or a small to medium sized bowl of nachos. Should we be allowing ourselves the odd treat here and there in our lives?
Yeah, 100%. You've got to enjoy food. And I don't like the, you know, the phrase as a bad food. We've got to have healthy relationships with food, and we've got to eat what we enjoy as well. But we just need to find a way to do it that's in an amount and not too frequent that it has adverse effects. So you can enjoy any food. No food's off limits. So enjoy your nachos, enjoy your beer, and just want to try and get people to step away from attitudes of feeling they have to punish themselves because they've had a beer or they've had a nachos. It's, you know, eating something that we do every single day of our life. So you don't need to punish yourself over one bad meal, 2 bad meals a week. It's something that we do for so long that we need to enjoy it.
Okay. So I mentioned kale at the start of the show. Is kale still a thing? Was it ever a thing? If not, what's the next food trend, would you say? I'm sure you've seen a few in your career.
I don't know where all the trends start from. Maybe Instagram these days. It's probably where they start, and a number of different influencers start, you know, posting about different foods. Kale is great. It absolutely tastes delicious, and it's got a number of vitamins in it that can actually support health. And, you know, we talked about immune function earlier. You know, it can actually contribute towards supporting health as well. We talked about vegan eating and people eating more with that style, which has become more popular amongst athletes. And there's a number of meat alternatives now which are coming to the market. So meatless burgers, meatless sausages, meatless equivalent of chicken, where you just taste it, and it tastes very similar in many of these instances. So food technology is coming a long way, no doubt. There's a number of things that will come back into fashion which were in fashion 20, 30 years ago, and it will come around again. Every food seems to have its moment. But you know, we have an approach where, you know, you do the fundamentals well, you can consume a whole variety of different foods and try not to follow too much of the fashion and the fads that's out there. Because if you're getting good nutrition support, then it's likely that you're getting all the nutritional requirements that you need without having to take superfoods that suddenly come into fashion on social media.
Okay, Mike, before we let you go, let's quickly bust some myths about food. This is a quick fire round. Is that okay?
I'll be on my toes.
So 5 a day, is that still a thing?
Yes, consuming enough fruit and vegetables is key. I'd probably go more than 5.
More than 5. What's your magic number?
Oh, no magic number, but I'm definitely going 5 to 7.
Okay. So keto diets, paleo diets, should we be embracing any of these sorts of diets at all?
I'm not a big fan of a lot of these fads and diets that come on. You know, sometimes some of the concepts within them might be right for you as an individual and your lifestyle, and might be beneficial as time, but definitely not cutting out food groups completely is an optimal way for most of us to live.
Okay. Calorie intake, is there a magic number, and what is it?
It's specific for you as an individual and the amount of activity like you do. You know, for a lot of us, it might be somewhere between 1500 and 2500 calories a day, but you know, some of us do a lot more activity than that.
And I think we all, or most of us, love a coffee. So caffeine, how much is too much?
There's no real number on it, but you know, 1 to 2 coffees a day, in my opinion, for most people is sufficient and isn't going to do too much harm.
And a lot of people talk about eating past a certain time in the evening. Is there a particular time you shouldn't eat beyond at night?
No, there's no real research on this, although there's a number of good academics that have conflicting thoughts on this. But certainly from the evidence available, eating after 6 p.m., for instance, isn't a bad thing.
Good. Okay, so best way to get lean, train more or eat less?
Like it comes down to energy balance. And if you want to reduce body fat, then having a energy deficit is the most proven strategy to do it.
Okay. And low-fat diets, are they a good thing or a bad thing?
It depends what the definition of low-fat is, but reducing fat is an easier way to create a calorie deficit and to consume less calories for some people.
And last one, organic food, is it better nutritionally, would you say?
A lot of the times it's not, in terms of the nutrients that it contains, but sometimes it can taste better. And yeah, there might be other factors that might make you want to eat organic over non-organic foods.
Great. Thanks, Mike. And where can we find out more about you, your work, or the work of the EIS in terms of nutrition?
If you go to the EIS website, we've got a nutrition hub on there. We have loads of delicious recipes. We actually do a Food Friday on the EIS social media, on Twitter and Instagram, where we post a number of different recipes and nutrition tips as well. So give us a follow on social, EIS to win, and also on the Nutrition Hub on the website as well.
That's great. Thanks for joining us, Mike.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Goldie.
If you like what you heard, please give the EIS Insider a follow wherever you get your podcasts. And whilst you're there, why not leave a review? And please do tell your friends about us too. If you'd like to get in touch with us, find us on social media at EIS to win. That's EIS, the number 2, win. You can also find out more about any of the topics we've discussed on our website. And for even more content, you can check out our YouTube channel. I'll be back next time with some more secrets from elite level sport, when we'll be finding out if cardio is officially dead, or if newer forms of exercise like HIIT are taking over. That's coming up in the next episode of the EIS Insider. Let's catch up soon.